Tracy versus County of Hanover is another. William A. Schumann, Vernon E. and Junior Corey S. Booker and Collins Counsel, Sterling E. Reed, Missouri County Attorney, Catherine E. Collins, Assistant County Attorney, Appalachian Counsel.
May it please the court, my name is William H. Schumann. I represent the appellant EMAC LLC. I would ask that I reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
All right.
The issue before this court is whether the trial court erred when it sustained a demur and dismissed the case with prejudice without the benefit of any evidence being taken. As alleged in the complaint, this is a stark example of a locality impermissibly discriminating against similarly situated landowners. In 2012, the developer of a destination commerce park in Hanover County, located adjacent to I-95, filed a conditional use permit, or CUP, to allow two highly visible LED signs that were designed to be visible from the interstate and to advertise all the various businesses throughout the destination commerce park. EMAC owned over 30 acres along I-95, and the original development plan of that park...
But was EMAC the applicant for the conditional use permit?
That was, as you see on the application, Your Honor, an agent of EMAC filed it. And when you look at the
applicant... Where does it say an agent of EMAC filed it?
On the application itself, the person who's signing it, the statement by that is they are affirming that they are an agent of the owner. They are the owner or the agent.
But the owner is identified as Northlake and also Craig Realty.
But it was also identified in terms of the property, the tax map parcel on the first one, as EMAC. They are listed as an owner, and they're affirming that they are representing the owner.
On the application. I know that they were engaged in negotiations with EMAC to purchase the property, and there was obviously EMAC owned the property, but how is EMAC entitled to seek a renewal of a permit that they didn't ask for in the first instance?
Because this application, with any zoning case, it runs with the land. That's why it was required on the application to show that you had the permission of the landowner to file it. So, for example, you can have a contract purchaser. They get a power of attorney.
Okay, educate me on this then. Is there an ordinance or is there a body of law in zoning in the zoning area that says that every time an application is made, the applicant is acting as an agent for whoever the title owner is of the property that's affected?
At the very least, Your Honor, that's a question of fact. And so what we're saying is, on the basis of the complaint, we alleged, one, that they were authorized. You also have the issue of authorization or ratification. We certainly have not contested that the person who filed the application was acting on our behalf.
No, but did you plead agency in the complaint?
We pled that it was our application and that we are ratifying it because we sought to renew the application itself. And that's why the trial court did not rule on that basis. That's simply, and we could, if they were amended, we could allege that specifically. But our whole point is that requires evidence. You see the application clearly states that the person is acting on behalf of the owner. That's why in a lot of zoning cases you'll see that the actual name of the zoning case may even be the attorney who's filing, but they have to demonstrate evidence that they're acting on behalf of the owner.
Counsel, I hear your argument, and if in fact Hanover, after, shall we say, 6 months, had revoked the approval of the first 12-month permission, of 12-month use permit, you have an interesting argument. But in this instance, it came at the time of renewal, did it not?
The first renewal, again, it was filed on behalf, showing agency on behalf of the owner. And then on the third one, when there was a separation of interests, EMAC itself filed the second renewal.
Okay. And EMAC filed the second renewal, although EMAC had not been the party that filed the first one or the original conditional use permit application. Is that correct?
Well, no. Throughout zoning, I mean, it's a fairly standard procedure that someone, for example, a contract purchaser or an agent, will file the zoning application. That's why if you look at the application, there is a positive statement that the person who's filing it is filing it on behalf and is an agent of the owner. And that's a positive statement that was made. In this case, for example, the county required...
Didn't the statement go farther, though, and indicate that there was a negotiation underway in terms of the use of this 3.5 acres?
On the application itself, they submitted a copy of the letter of intent. So they were once again demonstrating that they were having an interest in the property. And so what has occurred in this case is EMAC has given them, pursuant to that letter of intent, permission to file for the conditional use permit, because that would have been...
And was the letter of intent still in effect at the time of the second renewal?
The letter of intent was not in effect at the time of the second extension, but at that point, EMAC wants the sign. It's a very valuable sign, so they are not objecting to the renewal
and
of the application.
And was EMAC intending to develop the outlets at Richmond?
No. What EMAC was intending to do is... The Outlets of Mall is a one piece of an over 100-acre destination.
What was EMAC intending to use the sign for?
EMAC was intending to use the sign for its exact design purpose, was you build it and then you can allow everybody throughout the 100-acre destination Commerce Park to advertise on it, and then you get revenue.
Did EMAC have any agreement with the other part, with the other potential users of the sign?
In that case, there are two answers to that, Your Honor. As we alleged, the only issue that came up was the county was actually wanting EMAC, because they wanted Craig Realty to have the sign, to in effect give them a ground lease. And we indicated that we had those negotiations, but since Craig Realty, as alleged, knew it was going to get the sign regardless of the merits of the property, it didn't have that discussion. There are no, because this is a complaint, and demur, we don't have any evidence before the court of all the various things that we put before the county.
But we have lots of exhibits. I mean, doesn't that change this case? Craving Oreo was agreed to by consent order in a fairly unusual context for Craving Oreo, but nonetheless it was agreed to. All of those exhibits were before the court.
Not all the evidence that would have been before the court.
No,
for
the
example,
exhibits that were before the court under the Craving Oreo order, were they not properly before the court to review?
To the extent that they were before the court, they could be reviewed, but that makes a very important point, Your Honor. You have to look to the reason why they are attached to the complaint. So, for example, in deciding that it was fairly debatable based on the complaint, the decision to deny the extension, the trial court relied on Exhibit 9, which was the CUP application that Craig Realty has alleged secretly filed. As we set forth in the complaint, we were not attaching that for the truth of the matter asserted therein. Any of those unsupported statements, which at trial we intended to prove, were just a ruse and feigned differences. The trial court said it could look at that Exhibit 9 and basically disregard all the other allegations that are in the complaint and accept what was in Craig Realty's application, citing Eagle Harbor. That's a misconstruction of what Eagle Harbor stands for. In Eagle Harbor, the plaintiff had attached two methodology reports and had expressly alleged that those reports were true and accurate and represented exactly why the county did what it did and the reasons for it. So the allegation was, this exhibit is true. The statements are true. They disagreed about whether that was fairly debatable, but there was no question as to the validity and the facts in that methodology report. In contrast, in this case, that is the exact opposite of what we're doing. If you read the allegations in the complaint, we have maintained that it was baseless and that all that was a sham in order to cover favoring Craig Realty over EMAC, when in fact, when the case came before the Board of Supervisors, we've made basic allegations, Your Honor, detailed how there were two properties before before the Board of Supervisors.
There's a pretty fuzzy line, though, between the ancient use of craving warrior and the modern use, and the fuzziness is to what extent the merits can be addressed by the associated documents.
I believe under craving warrior, the standard is, if you're referring to documents in the complaint, the other party is entitled to have those documents attached as part of the complaint, since you're referring to them. And that was the basis of it doing. So that exhibit was being attached solely for the purpose to show that there had been a secret application or unknown that had been filed. That was the exhibit. As alleged, that was the only point of it. It was not to say that any of the statements in the exhibit were in fact true. That requires evidence. We, in our complaint, set forth pretty stark similarities between the various properties.
Can I interrupt you again? I apologize.
Sure.
But if the exhibits demonstrate to the trial judge that one of the reasons Hanover rejected the extension request is that EMAC was not, in fact, the applicant of the original conditional use permit, and that's... And then the allegation, and we have, in fact, the application before us. If you're a trial judge, you look at the application, you go, I don't see it. You say it's in the complaint that you've alleged directly that you have an agency relationship and they represented you or your client. Where is it in the complaint? I have it in front of me, and I overlooked it if it's there.
We allege that that the application fully complied with all available law and ordinances. That's a general... That is a general statement.
I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I'm trying to find a sentence that says EMAC was a principal and the agent was North Lake or Craig Realty and the application was filed on our behalf under principal agency law.
I would say two things. One is I will refer to and find the application itself, because the signature has a specific statement on the application that the person filing it is an agent of the owner.
So is not the owner on the application identified as North Lake and Craig Realty?
That was one of the applicants, but it was also saying on behalf of EMAC, because it was identified as a property owner on the property. Now, North Lake can be an applicant, just like I can in representing clients of Justice Kelsey. I could be filing a zoning case in my name. So if you look at it on the record before the Board of Supervisors, the zoning case will be in my name.
Right.
The issue is that I have authority to bind the tax map parcels that I put in the case. That's all this represents. But that was not the basis for the trial court's decision, and we should have been given leave to amend if that was the issue the case.
Counsel, let's hypothetically say that Hanover had approved your extension. At the time that the extension was made, and at the time you expected approval, did your client have any contractual relationship with any other potential user of the sign?
No, just
at the time that it was approved, could your client have used the sign solely to advertise the RV business?
Our position, Your Honor, is one, based on the allegations and the complaint, which need to be construed in our favor, there's absolutely no evidence that we would have done that. Second, if you look at the sign that was to the north that was approved, there were no other conditions and qualifications on that application. So it's using different standards. Our whole point is you have an application for a renewal that comes up, and the reason for the renewal is identical. The outlet mall hasn't been approved yet. The whole hallmark of impermissible discrimination is that you approved one and you didn't do the other.
Counsel, isn't the approval of the outlet, at least the financing of the outlet mall, dependent on receiving the signs? Isn't it? Is there a chicken and an egg issue here in terms of the sign approval?
Not on demur, Your Honor. I mean, if the trial court determines that may or may not be relevant depending on the facts, you need evidence to that regard. Our whole point is, right now, there's no evidence as to any of this. We need to look at what the allegations are. The allegations are we fully complied with the law. It was consistent with the application. In a complaint, generally, you're not going to list every conceivable fact that leads to that conclusion.
Were the proceedings of the Board of Supervisors either attached to the complaint or provided by way of the Craven lawyer motion?
No, the minutes were not attached. There was a statement that was quoted in one of the allegations, basically in which Ms. DeVay admitted that we wanted to give the sign to Craig Wilde. We thought that they would get that. That's the only evidence that's for the court. And our whole point is, no, this runs with the land. It doesn't matter ultimately who gets it. Lots of contracts fall through. And there's no restriction on the northern sign that prohibits that from being transferred to anybody else. I will reserve the balance of time.
You have 15 seconds.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I am Sterling Reeves, Hanover County Attorney, and with me at council table today is Catherine Collins, Assistant County Attorney. We are representing both the Board of Supervisors and the county in this action. And I would submit that the questions before the court today are, were these landowners similarly situated, and if so, was there a rational basis for the board's decision to approve one request for extension and deny the other? As previously noted, the trial court at the time it heard the demur had before it a 27-page amended complaint and 55 pages of exhibits, which include the applications and the attachments and the staff recommendations, all of the types of documents upon which local governing bodies routinely and reasonably rely in making zoning decisions. The court also had, through the briefs, the statutes, the provisions of the county's comprehensive plan, and the zoning ordinance provision that govern the board's decision in making board's decision in this case. Those documents, that record before the trial court, clearly indicate that these landowners were not similarly situated, which is, of course, the first step in proving a zoning discrimination case. On the one hand, you have North Lake Craig operating together, jointly filing the application, pursuant to an agreement for the operation of these signs. North Lake is the developer of a 150-acre multi-parcel destination commerce site. Craig is the proposed developer of a multi-tenant outlet mall. Those two jointly filed the application for CUP.
Council, is the relevant issue whether the applicants are similarly situated or whether the land is similarly situated?
Your Honor, the question is whether the landowners are similarly situated. This court made that distinction clear in Board of Supervisors v. McDonald, excellently written opinion, in 2001, which set forth the standards that apply where there's an allegation of discriminatory zoning. First, it is a legislative act, of course, that's presumed to be valid. The fairly debatable standard applies. The plaintiff must show that a land use permitted to one landowner is restricted to another landowner similarly situated. So it's not a comparison of the parcels themselves. It's whether the landowners are similarly situated.
The land use permitted is similarly situated. The land use, not the landowner.
Landowner is the term that's used in that opinion and others on point. I think in analyzing whether a landowner is similarly situated, you would look at the existing use of the property and the proposed use of the property and how those two fit in with or fail to fit in with the county's comprehensive plan and the purpose of the zoning ordinances that are applicable in that case.
May I interrupt briefly? When I first looked at your briefs and your opponent's briefs, I thought this was conditional use permit appeal. Isn't this really a question of Craven Oyer and the extent to which Craven Oyer can be used by a trial judge in this context? Because for the the sake of argument, no one's conceding anything here. If the trial judge is relying on all these exhibits and can make judgments based upon reasonable inferences from it, that's a very different case if he's only allowed to look at the exhibits as something referred to in the bill of complaint, which may or may not be contested at trial. Under the former situation, you have a very strong case. Under the latter situation, your opponent has a strong case. What's the answer to that?
The answer is that all of the exhibits came as attachments and as numbered exhibits to the amended complaint. So in the joint application, these actually appear as attachments to the amended complaint, and so they can be considered as...
And the craving order, was consensual, right?
It was consensual. Both parties agreed. I think it can fairly be interpreted from the order that one party wanted some things and the other wanted some things, and they agreed that these would become exhibits to the complaint, which is what they are, and that's the wording of the order granting the joint motion craving order. I think the parties consented. I think the plaintiff consented to have all of these exhibits on the record.
But did the plaintiff concede the truth of the matter? That everything in the exhibit was true and the trial judge could take it as true?
No, Your Honor. But the exhibits are the types of records that local governing bodies routinely must rely upon. Local governing bodies don't have the opportunity to conduct a trial, to examine witnesses, to put them under oath, to take evidence as to whether statements made in applications, such as Craig has developed malls elsewhere in the country and done
successfully.
Wouldn't
that be the purpose of the trial in this case, so that they could determine the truth of the allegations in the application, such as VDOT had stated that it has to be on the property of the mall owner? I mean, wouldn't that be the purpose of the trial, rather than looking at that document and assuming that that statement by VDOT or that representation about VDOT was correct?
Well, the precise issue before the court, the trial court and now this court, is whether the board's decision was fairly debatable, whether it was a rational decision.
Don't you have to get over the discrimination issues to reach the fairly debatable issue, though?
We do. And
was the court able to do that based upon the record, I think would be the more precise question.
The allegations in the complaint, the facts alleged in the amended complaint itself, show that these landowners are not similarly situated. Whereas one is the developer of a 150-acre park in a proposed outlet mall, the other is the owner of a single parcel with a single business, a large business, but a single business in that mall. Craig and Northlake submitted the application. They negotiated the terms and conditions. All of the exhibits were prepared by Craig and Northlake. EMAC didn't make the first appearance in the zoning process until 2 years later with the second request to extend the exhibit.
That's the part I don't understand in this case. EMAC shows up, asks for an extension on a conditional use permit where they're not identified as the owner or the applicant on the application, and then wants an extension with a change in the permit's authorization to allow them to do things that the original grant of the conditional use permit did not allow.
I think that EMAC actually sought a continuation of the permit as it was, but that permit was not properly suited for EMAC. It had the permanent wording on the sign is Outlets at Richmond, which is the... But it then was not to go on the outlet property. Clearly, the record illustrates that there had been a falling out between the parties.
The original permit presupposed the letter intent would be consummated with a sale, right?
That's
isn't
correct.
That the way it works?
That's
well, it
correct.
Wasn't consummated with a sale.
That's correct, and that's why the county takes a position that actually, as to the EMAC property, the original CUP was void ab initio.
Well, whether it's void ab initio or not is another question, but whether or not it's irrational to not renew it is a whole lot easier argument.
That's correct. And it is an easier argument if you think it's void ab initio. That's one reason not to renew it. In this case, the letter of intent, which EMAC relies upon as some suggestion of agency between the parties, actually, EMAC itself states in the amended complaint in paragraph 37, and that's Joint Appendix 285, that EMAC never signed the letter of intent, although it appears to have been signed by EMAC. So it's worth noting that the only document that provides even a hint of agency is one that EMAC itself asserts that it never signed. So the purpose of the destination commerce signs is to advertise the entire parks, the entire destination commerce park, and in this case, in particular, specifically the outlets at Richmond, which is intended to be the anchor. For the board, the extension of the conditional use permit for Northlake and Craig furthers the goal of the ordinance allowing these signs. But the extension of the permit for Craig would not. In fact, the extension of the permit for Craig would preclude a sign on the outlet mall property itself because of the distance requirement that these signs be at least 3,000 feet apart. And the Craig and the EMAC property are side by side. So had the board approved the extension of the sign on the EMAC property, the outlet mall could not have the have
Isn't
a sign.
Isn't the other sign on Northlake's property where it always was and the distances were always sufficient? I missed that your point there.
And I apologize. The original conditional use permit approved two signs. Mm-hmm. One on the north, on Northlake property, and one on the south, right, on property owned by EMAC, but understood to be under contract to Craig. Those signs are 3,000 feet apart. Mm-hmm. When the sale of the EMAC property to Craig didn't take place, had the board approved the extension of the request for the EMAC sign, then Craig would not have a sign. So you would have the outlet mall that would not have a sign on its property, its 43-acre multi-tenant property.
There is no evidence before us at this point that EMAC would not have advertised the outlet mall on its sign. Wasn't that the purpose of both of the signs, that all of the businesses...
It was the purpose, Your Honor, and there was also no evidence either before the board, before the court, or before this court that there was any binding assurance that EMAC would ever build the sign or that it would offer it on reasonable terms for use, advertising for use by other tenants in the mall. EMAC could simply have decided, I won't build the sign, and then the outlet mall won't come.
So the original permit presupposed that the letter of intent would ultimately be consummated in a sale and that all the conditions in the original conditional permit would be applicable, but obviously none of that happened.
That's correct.
Why is that not the answer to the case?
We believe it is. If we believe that's the rational basis for the board to deny the extension of the permit.
Wasn't that one of the reasons the board did deny the extension?
It is. In fact, that's quoted by Mr. Vaya in his motion. He says that the issuance of the permit, and this is quoted in paragraph 67 of the amended complaint, the issuance of the permit was based upon the representation that the property upon which the signs would be located would be owned by Craig Realty Group, developer of the mall. It is well known that the proposed destination commerce signs are vital to the outlets at Richmond becoming reality. And the terms of the CUP link construction of the sign to the construction of the mall. Unless the owner of the property where the sign is to be located has signed agreements in place with Craig Realty and the owners of other property in the destination commerce sign, the sign does not meet the criteria of the proposed destination commerce ordinance. I think that's the rational basis. There are many ways in which these property owners are not similarly situated, but even if that were not the case, there is a rational basis for the board's decision to treat these two owners differently.
Having found the rational basis, the next issue then is it fairly debatable? Is that correct?
The fairly debatable standard, as I understand it, governs the court's analysis of those questions. similarly situated, and rational basis. Mm-hmm. So the question of whether there's a rational basis or not is viewed under the fairly debatable standard. So reasonable people would disagree.
Do I understand the first decision that has to be made is whether they're similarly situated?
That's correct.
And your position is that based on this pleading, the court could determine that they were not similarly situated, and so therefore demur was proper. Is that what I understand your argument to be?
That's correct. On demur, the court is entitled to take into account not only all of the factual allegations in the complaint, but those as amplified by what's
and
in
as
the
I
exhibits.
Understand your argument further, is this Exhibit 9, which is Craig Realty's application, which makes certain representations which allowed the board to determine that they were not similarly situated.
That's correct. And those are those types of applications upon which local governing bodies have to rely when they make their zoning decisions. And so if the question is, was that decision reasonable, was it fairly debatable, you have to keep in mind.
But can the court get to the fairly debatable decision until it makes the similarly situated decision? I understand the argument about the board and it's the basis for its decision. But once it's in court and there's an allegation we are similarly situated and the board discriminated against us, can the court get to the reasonable debatable without the similarly situated? No.
No.
Okay.
Your time has expired.
Thank you.
Three points. First, Craving Lawyer doesn't change the standard for demur and the inferences that you give in favor of the plaintiff. Second, if that...
But if, as he says, that document shows they're not similarly situated, then why doesn't that end the inquiry?
Well, that document, for example, if it had been a forgery, the issue is there any... Under Fairfax versus Williams, the Fairfax made allegations that the facilities were not adequate. What this court said is anything is debatable. What you have to do is come back with credible evidence that supports that. So that's why we have a trial. The question is, once we go
Counsel,
to trial...
Isn't Fairfax versus Williams distinguishable? I mean, there the board very specifically said, you know, we've already approved one of these shopping centers, and if we approve a second shopping center, the first one might not do very well.
No, Your Honor, that's the Davis case.
Okay.
What I'm referring to is Fairfax versus Williams, where a case was denied because the county claimed that there weren't public facilities.
Do you also rely upon Davis?
Oh, absolutely, because what that demonstrates
why
is...
Why isn't Davis distinguishable?
Because Davis stands for the proposition, one of the leading cases along with Roe and McDonald's that stand for the proposition of, you've got to look at the land, this is a land use case, you've got to look at the land uses and not who the owner happens to be. If you're looking at the landowners, then you're basically discriminating against one versus the other, so you cannot do that under the case. We would point out that the agency issue, Your Honor, is one of fact. I mean, and I would point to paragraphs 42, 73, 74, and 43 of our complaint, which demonstrate that we said, in effect, that all the legal requirements have been met and that we ratified and authorized whatever had been done. You have an application, if you look at it, Your Honor, in this case, on the application itself, on page 322, you have one of the owners filing the application. It's listing all the other owners, so they're an owner applicant. So then they list all the tax map parcels, which includes our client. And then they sign it.
I think you have answered the questions that were posed to
Honor.
You, and you are moving into uncharted territory.
I appreciate that.
That's quite all right.
Thank
your
you very
time
much.
Time has expired. Call the next case.